Welcome to Career Tools. This week, how to have a great hotel stay. Chapter 2, checking in. Here we go. Okay, so you have some guidance for everybody about hotel stays because you stay a lot of hotels. Oh, wait, no.
No, I think I stole all the advice I have from you.
Yes, in fact, and you're at home and I'm recording in a hotel room at the Detroit airport. At one of the nice airport hotels that actually should be allowed to call itself an airport hotel because it's actually at the terminal, which is lovely. One of the parts of hotels that's important is checking in. There are some things that happen relative to checking in that are important. Why don't you walk us through an outline of the cast?
Sure. So we're going to use DISC to get some rapport with the check-in clerk. We're going to ask for an upgrade. And motels, we're going to ask for an outside upstairs room.
Because, believe it or not, folks, there are still plenty of motels in the world.
And you might be sent to somewhere. It's probably punishment, but...
Yeah.
In hotels, ask for a high floor away from the elevators. And ask for a different room if you don't get what you want.
Yeah, that's something a lot of people are not willing to do. They just assume that they're stuck with it. We talked about last cast about being involved in the frequent stayer programs, the loyalty programs, where you automatically get an upgrade, particularly if you're there in the middle of the week. People don't realize that hotels are often full on weekends, particularly when they're in big cities or in places that people like to go, because people like to go there on the weekends, separate from summertime. And if you're there on a Tuesday night, there's a good chance you can get an upgrade if you're in a loyalty program. And if you don't get the room you want, as you say, it's way better to ask. So let's start with the check-in clerk, okay? You say use DISC to get rapport with the check-in clerk. This is my story, right?
This is your story. You go ahead and tell it.
Do you want me to just walk through it? Okay.
Well, yeah.
Okay, so folks, one of the things that we teach at Career Tools and Manager Tools is respect for other people, that behavioral diversity exists in the world, and your way of getting ahead is not the only way. There's somebody else who has gotten ahead even much further than you have with the exact opposite intentions as you. If you're a high D, if you're a forceful, take no prisoners, make it happen kind of person, a little rough around the edges, but by gosh, when the going gets tough, they give me the ball. That's great. And there's probably somebody two or three levels above you in your organization or somewhere else who's a reserved, people-focused person who everyone would describe as the best, nicest, warmest, most caring person in the world who can't imagine being rough around the edges at all. And we believe that because all the jobs with dogs and trees are taken in companies, paying attention to other people's behaviors helps you be more effective. We're not suggesting you abandon who you are, because you're certainly not going to be able to mirror somebody so precisely that they're gonna naturally click with you. That doesn't happen. The key with communication and working with other people is not that you can communicate perfectly, but so that you can avoid communicating disastrously. I think Oscar Wilde once said the great fallacy of communication is us ever believing we're doing it. And too many of us, a good example is checking in a hotel. Many of us see the check-in process as a necessary step you have to go through, but not one that you can add a lot of value at, which in fact you can, but separate from that. And they miss that they have an opportunity to interact with another person in a way that's helpful to the other person and then therefore could be helpful to them as well. And it's amazing to me that it's a simple interaction. And there are thousands of these that we all go through every week, every month, that we could transform with some simple thinking. And this is one of my very favorite things to do in hotels because I spend so many nights in hotels. Now, this trip, actually, I flew in today. I talked tomorrow with a client, and I'm home tomorrow night, which is pretty rare. Usually, a client trip takes two nights, in which case, with two nights in a hotel, you absolutely want to make a good first impression on the staff when you walk in. But imagine you're walking into a hotel at 1 in the morning. Okay, you're probably the only person walking in at that time, unless there's a hotel shuttle from the airport, in which case your chances of being there with somebody else drastically increases. Okay, by the way, I've found it as a general rule that if you arrive at the hotel check-in at the exact same moment as someone else, and the clerk recognizes that you're arriving at the exact same time as someone else, you taking a step back with a smile and letting someone else go first causes the clerk to like you. If, in fact, there's a pushiness between the two of you, the clerk assumes you're both going to be aggressive and that the interactions will not be as good. And whether the interactions are aggressive or not with the clerk assuming that they're going to be, is going to be less good in his or her interactions with you. Okay, that said, how do we use DISC to get rapport? So the first thing you do when you walk into a hotel, and in my case, I tend to walk into a lot of the same hotels I've been at before, you know where the reservation desk is, but regardless, you find the reservation desk, the check-in desk, and you start walking toward it, and maybe not at 1 a.m, but generally over the time of the day, there's somebody there, and if there's not a line, and if there is someone there and it's late at night, you will probably be the only one there. What you want to do is make eye contact with the desk clerk. Now, you can do this after you've stood in line, right? And they look up at you and they make eye contact with you. In that first moment, you look to see whether or not they smile at you when they make eye contact. Now, that's the only behavior you need to look for. Okay, you can add to it some tone in their voice and so on. But basically, smiling is one of those discriminators in terms of how people behave. People who are I's and S's, the right-hand side, the people-focused side of the DISC model, tend to smile more than people who are D's and C's, the more factual, rational, analytical side of things. Half the people in the world tend to be analytical and rational and task-focused at work, and half tend to be people-focused. People-focused tend to smile more than those who are not. And it's not black and white. It's not as if D's and C's never smile. D's might argue that they don't, but in fact, they do. And so what we're doing is we're using that smile, that initial smile, as a proxy for some determination of how this person sees the world. If they're a people person, they probably don't see the next few moments as a transaction. They see it as an opportunity to interact and to start a relationship or to bond with you. Or if that's too strong a word for those of you who are thinking it's only a hotel clerk, they have an opportunity to impress you or to work well with you. In other words, they're interested in the connection and the relationship they form, however briefly, with you. They're much more likely to describe it in those terms if they smile at you when they first see you. Now, smiling is not better or worse. Some of you walk up to a desk clerk and say, I don't want you to smile at me. I simply want you to be efficient in this transaction. And that's probably because you're a high D or a high C and you believe efficiency is very valuable. And by the way, I'm partially a high D and partially a high I, and I think efficiency is fabulous. I think I said before on air, my greatest retail transaction of my life, which I don't think anybody will ever be able to beat, is about 3 weeks after the first iPhone came out. I checked the stockage levels at our local Apple store at La Cantera, where our friend David Statler used to work. He's now with Rackspace. And I was headed to the airport. I went by the Apple store, and I walked in, knew they had iPhones. Again, it's like a month. I think it's like a month after iPhones launched, one summer, as I recall. But anyway, and I looked at the concierge was right there, and I looked at him, and I said, he says, hi, how can I help you, sir? I said, I'd like an iPhone, the biggest one you got. He said, okay. He walked behind the counter, grabbed a box, handed me the box. I handed him a credit card. He swiped the credit card, and he says, are you market manager? I showed him the comment. I said, yeah, that's me. He says, all right, have a good day. It's 45 seconds. It was literally the most, it was efficient, it was joy.
I love those pure joy. I love going into Apple. I always say to the concierge guy, I've got an appointment, or I'm buying stuff. I need a checkout person. I've got a list. Find me. Yeah. I need someone to take my money. I'm just really clear about this is exactly what I want. And they know in that moment, like, they find you the person who's available, who does your thing, rather than going through the story of, you know, well, yeah, maybe. And yeah. And you know that person's probably not the person who's going to help you, so you might as well give them the information they need so that they can pass you to the person that is going to help you.
Yeah. So high D's and C's. Wendy tends to be a high D. I'm partially a high D and partially high I. We tend to want efficiency in those kinds of interactions. There's nothing wrong with wanting that. But you wanting an efficient interaction with somebody who's smiling at you, if you don't click with them because of an effort you make, you reduce the chances that you'll have a good checking experience. Now, why would a good checking experience be helpful? Because maybe you want a room upgrade. Maybe if there aren't very many rooms at all, and his or her boss has said, You can't really move people around. We've got rooms all reserved and everything else. But if you get to your room and it's not made up correctly and you want to go back downstairs or you want to call and say, look, I'm going to need a different room. If they connected with you, if you had an interaction with them that was what they would consider to be effective, either because it was warm or because it was efficient, either one, you're much more likely to get what you want. You're much more likely to get a free newspaper in the morning. You're much more likely to get a late checkout. Okay. So what do we actually do? If your clerk is people focused and you know that because he smiles, okay, you walk up to the front desk and what I do is say, hi, how are you today? I'm Mark Horseman. I'm here to check in. Nice property. All with a smile. Okay. And when the clerk says, hey, I'm great. How are you, Ms. Horseman? I'm doing well. Thanks. It's going to be a good day. Here for a good client. Excited. Right? That's me being effective with a person who smiled at me. Okay? Continue smiling. Verbally answer with enthusiasm. When they say, hey, you know, we're glad you're a double silver platinum deluxe superstar on Starwood points. And I said, great. Super duper. Love you guys. You're wonderful. And he's having a good time, and I'm having a good time. And the reason I'm having a good time is because I'm paying attention to another person. I happen to get joy out of that. And I believe I'm creating a relationship that may, in fact, benefit me. And even if it doesn't benefit me, it will benefit him, and perhaps he'll spread the joy to somebody else. Okay? If, on the other hand, the clerk doesn't smile at me in that first two-second interaction, even from 30 feet away as I'm walking up to the desk, she's probably more likely task focused. She's a high D or a high C. She doesn't smile. The word that passes through my head is transactional. Now look, when I go to the front desk, guys, it is both an opportunity to relate to someone and it is a transaction. The question is how much you see of it as a transaction and how much you see of it as a relationship. Now there's some of you who are listening going, I can't believe you would call this a relationship. It's a transaction. And the other, believe me, folks, the other half of the world who are listening goes, I can't believe people would think it's simply a transaction. How rude of you to not be respectful and kind to the person who's helping you transact your business. And it's you say potato, I say potato. So if your clerk that you're talking to doesn't smile, she's probably task focused. She's going to be efficient. What I do is I walk up to the check-in counter and I say, Mark Horseman, checking in. Sometimes even I'll say, Horstman, Mark, checking in. But I've discovered that that actually confuses them because most people say their first name first. And if I say Mark, they know immediately that that was my first name, and then they're going to hear my second name. And when they hear that, they're ready to hear the name that my reservation surely is filed under.
That helps a lot for me, that I say my first name first, because people have to, in the US, have to get used to my accent. And so the first, yes. When I'm saying Wendy, they're saying, what the is that noise coming out of her mouth? And by the time I get to Lord, they've kind of got the hang of, oh, this might be a name. And that helps if you're abroad, you know, anywhere where you're not speaking the same language or with the same accent as the people that are behind the desk. That helps a lot.
You're just trying to say that so that people will think, yeah, you can't be going around saying you're Lord Wendy.
I wish I was Lady Wendy. It would be so much more fun.
Yes, but
yeah, it doesn't really work for me.
Yeah, you wouldn't work here, unfortunately. Okay. All I did was give them the information they needed. I have my credit card and ID ready to hand over immediately. In fact, I'm holding it right in front of them. And they're thinking, this is the best person ever. They know that the idea here is for me to have high throughput, to have a pleasant conversation. And their definition of pleasant is efficient. Okay, that clerk wants to get that transaction done quickly. Maybe she's the night auditor. You know, when she checks that, you know, oh, you're here for two nights, and I noticed that you're a double secret probation guy at Starwood Points. You say, that's correct. You don't say, yeah, that's right. I'm glad to be here, because to her, that's unnecessary. It's fluff. It's heck. For all we know, it's you hitting on her. I'm kidding, guys. So use the fact that they smile to change your behavior slightly. Now, is this building on a fairly thin reed? It is. Is it always correct? No. Is it more correct than me being whatever mood I'm in at the time? Oh, absolutely. It's right about 90% of the time. And 90% of the time, I have a better check-in experience. And I want to go to this effort because, again, I may want an early check-in. sometimes I get here early, right? Or a late checkout. Or I want the room I want, up, you know, high in the hotel, away from the elevators. Although that's the common wisdom. I don't need it because I can sleep anywhere right across from the elevator. It doesn't matter. You could have the ice machine in my room and I would sleep. Maybe I want to get into the gym when it's technically closed. Maybe I want room service at 10:15, even though it closed at 10 o'clock. Maybe I want a different room because there's a noisy room near me. Somebody's partying. Or I want the bellman to do something special with my bags. And I've discovered that giving people what they want from me is generally a good precursor to increasing the chances that I get what I want from them, rather than the other way around.
And I think it's important to get that. It's no more effective to go through the day smiling at everyone and being lovely than it is not smiling at anyone and being curt. It depends on the person that you're interacting with, and it's not necessarily the hotel clerk, but anybody you meet, because half of the people are smiley, happy people, and half of the people are task focused. You gotta get the right one with the right one, the right behavior with the right person.
Yes.
Your natural personality or your natural behavior all of the time reduces your effectiveness by 50%. And smiling is so easy, right? Like it's just one thing to look for.
And folks, if you're not willing to smile and be kind to somebody at 1 a.m, you can stop listening to the rest of this cast.
I absolutely am not when I'm tired and grouchy. I'm like, I don't want to talk to anybody. And I find this useful because it gives me some rules. And I'm like, okay,
yeah.
I know I have to do this and I have to do it for the next 4 minutes. And then I'm going to be in my room and I can do whatever I like.
Yeah, I have to say, people who say, well, I'm grouchy and, you know, it's their job to check me in and I'm in a grouchy mood. Like, okay, I want to check in right after you. I'm always hoping that if a flight is canceled, years ago this used to happen. It doesn't happen to me anymore because American Airlines calls me now. But if a flight got canceled and we had to go back to the gate agent or whatever, you always want to be in line behind the guy who's a jerk to the gate agent. So you can come up and say, look, I know you're going to do the best you can. I'm not that guy. Whatever you can do is great. I'm sure it'll be fine. I know it's not your fault. I know the weather's not your fault. It'll be okay. And suddenly, you're sitting in first class.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about asking for an upgrade. Go ahead.
So this is surprisingly easy. There is.
Yes.
It's not secret words. It's not there's not a code. You don't have to pass the front desk a certain amount of money and like secret it, you know, all folded up so nobody can see it. All you do is say, "Is there a better room available?" And the answer is yes or no. Or it's usually yes, but it's yes for you or no for you.
The words they actually say, Wendy, are "Let me check for you."
Uh-huh.
They do every time. Now, I've talked to people who run hotels, and they actually are trained to say that even when the inventory is not there. But sometimes, I think what you were getting at is you're much more likely to get a better answer if you've treated them better. In their mind, they get to decide whether or not you're treating them well. But in fact, is there a better room available? Let me just check for you, Mr. Mm-hmm. Smith or Mrs. Lord or Ms. Lord, right?
Yeah.
Why not? Let them look. Yeah.
Yeah. And okay. If it's late at night, if it's got to, you know, 10 o'clock after people are making reservations, I mean, people make reservations for that night of a hotel until 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. And at that point, they know that any free rooms are going to be free for the rest of the night. And because hotel rooms, is the word fungible? Like, they can't be used.
Yeah.
They can't be used the
well,
next day.
Well, they're not fungible. Oh. Yeah, they have an expiry, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what's the word? It's not fungible. What's the word that starts with an F that's, I was going to say fragile, but that's not the word. They have an expiration date. Oh, well, it doesn't matter. They're like airline seats, yeah.
Exactly. If a better room is available, it costs the hotel no more to put you in it than it does for them to put you in the room they originally had. And if you've got a rapport with the desk clerk and hopefully you're part of the loyalty program, but even if you're not, they can put you in a better room if they want to. And the important thing is if they want to. And that if they want
yeah.
to depends on
if
whether
want
or not
to.
They've decided
yeah.
they like you.
That's the margin, guys. Look, whatever industry you're in, there's probably a range of prices for the products that are fairly well standard, whether you sell routers or airplane wings or desks or water bottles. there's not a range from zero to a billion in terms of price. You're playing within some range of cost and what the market can bear. Same thing's true with people. The question is, if they want to, that's the gray area you're playing in all the time. How can I help this person have a good experience with me? Not how can I manipulate them, but how can I help them? What can I do to increase the chances that the margin will come to benefit me? And by the way, if it's their opportunity to serve you, if you benefit, it was their choice to have you benefit. And they actually like those exchanges. So it's absolutely smart to say, you know, is there a better room available? You don't say, by the way, notice, we're not saying you should say, I'd love it if there's a better room. And the difference is because it one is a question and the other is a statement. And a savvy clerk doesn't have to answer. And if you tell a factual, rational, analytical, high D, high C desk clerk at 1 in the morning, I'd love a better room, and he or she is not in a great mood, you might get back, everyone does, sir. And they have no obligation to give you that room. And if you're not doing, hey, it'd be great if you could do something for me, wink, wink, and this is a high D or a high C, you just creep them out. They're not getting you a room. Let me just check for sure. Oh, I'm sorry, no. They're already saying, oh, I'm sorry, no, before they're even typing. Hardly, right?
Like a magic creature. And
look, I want to add something else here in terms of asking for an upgrade. Guys, don't assume that the clerk is the only person who has that kind of discretion. The Ritz Hotel in Chicago, which happens to be managed at this point in 2013, in the last couple of years, as a Four Seasons property, even though it's Ritz branded, it's a funny hotel. It's not funny. It's just laid out differently. And then it's off of Michigan Avenue. It's by Water Tower on the north end of Michigan Avenue. And you have to get an elevator and go up, I think, 12 floors to get to the lobby, which is a lovely lobby. It's really got a great lobby, but it's not street level. And I got on the elevator with a gentleman, really sharp guy in a suit, which I told him I'm really looking forward to the property. I was there to see my tailor who was in from London. And I said, have you stayed here before? So actually, this is my hotel. and he walked me right to the desk, right to the, he says, will you please help my friend, Mr. Horseman, check in? Let's see what we can't do. Now, I'm sure because of the way I was dressed and how various things I did caused him to think I'm a frequent traveler. I don't remember the details of the conversation other than I remember him saying, this is my hotel. Yeah, he was the GM. And I'll tell you what, Bellman, guys at the door, anybody being nice to people and being nice to them in a way that they would understand being nice, huge plus, huge plus.
It's a lot like being nice to the receptionist when you are going for a job interview. The receptionists and secretaries have a lot of power, and so do all the people that you see that you potentially would dismiss.
And it's not hard to be nice, guys. It's not. And you don't need to be smiling and super jokey and try to be super friendly with a receptionist who comes across as fairly taciturn. You don't. You can be efficient. You can be brief. You can be polite. You can be almost warm, but you don't have to try to be smooth or clever or cute with someone who's fairly efficient and direct and straightforward. And you start by paying attention. Do they smile? Okay, what about rooms?
Okay, so in motels, we're going to ask for an outside upstairs room. That's so difficult to say, outside upstairs.
Well, actually, let's change it. It's actually what you ask for is up and out. That's the nomenclature in the business. You say, I want an up and out.
Right.
You don't want a downstairs room because that has more foot traffic past it. And often motels, because of their price point, have more families in them. Motels, by the way, folks, one of the ways you determine a motel from a hotel is that the passageways in motels are outside, or put differently, they may be covered, but they're not indoors. In other words, it's not an air-conditioned or it's not in a climate-controlled space. So you end up getting, if you're downstairs, you get a lot of foot traffic and family foot traffic, and often loud family foot traffic. And you don't want an inside room because often there's a pool in the middle. And so even if you don't have foot traffic, you have noise from the pool. And you might think that being up one stay at one floor wouldn't make a difference, but it does. So an inside downstairs room for a single person traveling on business is the worst choice to make in a motel. outside, upstairs, away from reception. You don't want to be right over reception. It's likely to be the quietest. And it's a little bit longer of a walk, but frankly, at motels, you end up driving around the back of the motel anyway in most cases. And we're not going to spend too much time on that because I could tell you a ton more about motels, but motels are much less prevalent than they were 30 years ago. I've stayed in many motels in my career. Oftentimes, I consider it a privilege to stay in a motel because I'm going to a place where there are employees of the firm that is a client, and usually it's a plant, and I'm getting to see way behind the scenes, and I'm not getting a senior person's standard line. I'm going to talk to real people about real problems, and it's exciting.
Okay, and then if we're in a hotel, we're going to ask for a high floor away from the elevator. So the higher the floor, the further you are away from the entrance or the traffic noise. Especially, I've noticed that a couple of hotels I've stayed in recently, they're kind of triangular, and they have like this huge atrium in the middle, and then they have the bar at the bottom, and all the noise from the bar echoes up all of the floor. So you've got to be really high up before you stop getting that noise. And there's nothing that I hate more when I'm trying to sleep than hearing people party. It just irritates me. And then some people don't like heights, so those floors are likely to be emptier.
I don't have any problem sleeping anywhere at any time. You know, if I lay down and I want to be asleep, I can be asleep. I don't like to sleep, but I have noticed many people saying to me, I can't believe they put me on the second floor. And of course, we're going to talk about that in just a minute. I said, well, ask for a higher floor. And they said, they do that? I said, yeah, absolutely, they'll do that.
And you can put it in your preferences on the loyalty program too, on some of the on some of the hotels. And the other thing you want to be is away from the elevators, especially if you're like me and you don't sleep well. So the elevators, especially in airport hotels where people are leaving and arriving at all times of day and night, they go up and down and they ping and they rumble and make a noise. And the lady announces, this is floor 24 every time. And you don't want to be near that. And if you're a light sleeper, or even if you're not, because people coming out of the elevator, if they've been flying, they're still on. Yeah, they're still on. I'm awake. Right. And they're talking to their friends and they're banging the door because they might not even be, their bodies might not even be in the time zone that you're in. You know, if they've just flown internationally, it could feel like the middle of the morning to them, and they're not deliberately being disrespectful, but literally it's possible to forget. Yeah.
Yeah, they're contextually unaware.
Exactly. Yes.
And it's funny we mentioned this because I stayed at O'Hare Hilton just recently when my flights, I had to get from Charlotte to, gosh, I don't know where I was going. To Cupertino. And my American flight got canceled because of some American problems. And I ended up spending the night in Chicago. And the room I had, when the elevator doors opened, I think I was on the 11th floor, maybe not. Maybe I was on the 4th floor. I can't remember. When the elevator doors opened, there were signs pointing left and right. And it was like, let's assume my room was 414. It says 401 to 413 left. And then it says 415 to 470 right. And I did a quick double take, and I thought,
my number's not there.
My number's not there. And then I realized between the two signs was the door to my room. And if I had fallen out of the hotel, if I'd fallen out of the elevator and put my hand forward as I fell, I would have run into the door of my room. And you couldn't have told me that it was any different than the other room in the hotel. And I know I'm unusual in that regard. And I know we have a lot of light sleepers or people who sleep fine at home, but are absolutely light sleepers on the road because of noises, because of they don't know it, because of creaking, because of wind and a high rise, because of planes landing and taking off. So just ask. High floor, away from the elevators, away from the ice machine, okay? You can do it.
Yeah, you can absolutely ask, and all you're doing is minimizing the number of things that might disturb you. I still don't sleep well, but at least I've cut down the number of things that might disturb me by 3. So the last point in this is ask for a different room if you don't get what you want. So if you get up to the 4th floor, open the elevator doors open, and you see in front of you your room and you want to be far away from the elevator, get back in the elevator, go down to the reception and say, I'm so sorry, but I would like to be further away from the elevator. Is it possible for you to find me a different room?
Yeah. And if they say, it's not, depending upon what kind of mood you're in, you could say, can I ask to speak to the manager? Mm-hmm. Right? And you may still end up in that room, but as long as you're not rude and say, well, you're not treating me well and I want to talk to the manager, this simply can't happen, then it's fine. It's completely okay. And if they don't have any rooms, they'll tell you. We just had a case at our Boston conference where the hotel was oversold and they were out of rooms for one of our attendees, which was a problem. It happens. They oversell hotels on you know, certain times they oversell the hotel because they know there are going to be some cancellations at the last minute. And look, there's nothing wrong as well with saying, I asked for X and I've been given Y. If you didn't ask this trip, but you're in their loyalty program and your loyalty number is in your reservation, that means the system asked for that room and it didn't get it. So you can actually say, I asked for X and I've been given Y. Is X not available? Or perhaps it was just a misunderstanding. I just want to make sure that you're aware of my preferences and I prefer to have my preferences, all things being equal. And look, you may be tired and grumpy, and there's no excuse for directing that tiredness and grumpiness toward the clerk, right? It's like taking your anger out on a flight that's delayed because of weather, taking that anger out on a gate engine. It makes no sense at all.
And I find that formulation works a lot in a lot of different situations, not just for hotel clerks. When you thought you asked for X and you were given Y, just say, I asked for X and I've been given Y. Was there a misunderstanding or is that not available? It helps a lot.
And look, if you don't get what you want and you've done your due diligence in order to encourage the hotel to give you what you want, and they've made an error that's not acceptable, be clear about what you want. It's surprising to me people get upset in a customer service in what we call service recovery moment. And they say, the phrase that is so hard, I want you to make this right. Well, making it right is a characterization of you made a mistake and I want you to compensate me. And there needs to be some moralistic justice here. It's very hard for people in the service business to do that. On the other hand, if you say, I waited 90 minutes for room service, and unfortunately when it came, it was cold. I'm sure it was just delayed in delivery, and that's fine. However, I couldn't eat it, so that's not acceptable, and I'd like to be reimbursed for that service. I don't think I should have to pay for the service. Now, the manager can deal with that, but I want you to make this right is a vague threat that suggests that there will be some sort of moralistic justice rule applied to the how they respond. And they may say, well, no, I can't do that, but I could do this. But if you get into high dudgeon, you're not helping yourself. And I can promise you this. If you get into high dudgeon with some service people, they tell stories about you at the end of their shift to everybody else. If you're really bad, they use your name.
I have a blog I read that's just bad customer service experiences from the customer, nearly always from the customer service person's point of view. And So if you get into high dudgeon, you're on the internet.
You're on the internet, exactly. Yeah, and that's it, right? We're going to use DISC to get the rapport we want with the check-in clerk. Not hard. Are they smiling? How do we interact with them? Go ahead and ask for an upgrade. Nothing wrong with that. It happens far more frequently than you can imagine. In motels, you ask for an up-and-out room. In hotels, ask for a high floor away from the elevators. And gosh, if you don't get what you want, ask for a different room. You may not always get it, but you'll probably get it 90% of the time. And they'll appreciate it if you do it in a professional way. I almost texted a friend of mine today to say, my life is glamorous. You know, people think because I fly first class, it's glamorous.
As you're in Detroit.
Yes, I'm slumming around on some shuttle to go from one terminal to another in order to get to the Westin at McNamara Terminal. It sounds romantic, but it gets old fast. And there are some simple things you can do, not only in terms of preparation, but also in terms of interaction and understanding how the business works, that you'll get more of what you want. And it's always better to work with the staff rather than against them.
Absolutely.
There we go. Thanks, Wendy.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Thanks, everybody, as Mike would say. Hope you enjoyed it. I look forward to seeing you here next week on Career Tools. And it'll be Wendy and I yet again. Until then, have a good week.